wise person once said that vengeance is a dish that should be eaten cold. In the case of the dry martini, the avenger drank his vengeance from a cocktail glass. It began as the routine investigation of a tip on a West Coast smuggling operation. Although I arrived in San Francisco after business hours, I found Mr. Jerome Pearson, the head of the Monsoon Trading Company, still at work in his office.
Well, Mr. Moto, this is indeed a pleasure. I've wanted to meet you for a long time.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson.
Sit down.
Yes.
No. Take the leather chair. It's more comfortable.
Thank you. I will not take up much of your time, Mr. Pearson.
Well, I was just on the point of knocking off for the day. Have a cocktail?
Oh, no, thank you.
Well, nothing like a dry martini to step you back after a long, hard day's work. Sure you won't join me?
Quite sure, Mr. Pearson. Thank you.
Well, some people think that a martini should be stirred. But I say if you don't shake a cocktail, it's never really cold.
I am told there are two schools of thought on that.
Cold, dry, perfect. Well then, Mr. Moto, what's on your mind?
I was sent here to San Francisco to investigate an anonymous letter.
About me?
Not specifically. Your firm, the Monsoon Trading Company, was mentioned by name.
In what connection, sir?
In connection with a smuggling operation.
Were you able to trace the writer of this letter?
Not yet, sir.
Well, if there's any smuggling going on this firm, I don't know anything about it, Mr. Moto.
Would it be possible for such a thing to occur without your knowledge?
I don't know how. All our shipments are checked through customs in the ordinary manner. All our records, invoices, bill of lading, and so on, are double-checked by the customs people and by us.
What do you deal in for the most part?
Oh, textiles, straw matting, that sort of thing. We import chiefly from India and Malaya.
Yes.
Pardon me.
Certainly.
Dividend.
What shipping firms do you deal with?
Well, we generally wait until we have a full cargo and charter a ship.
I see.
If you'd like to look over our records, our treasurer, Mr. Harper, will be only too glad to show them to you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Pearson. When would that be convenient?
Oh, say, first thing tomorrow morning?
Excellent.
Please be on time. Time's money, you know. By the way, Moto, my chauffeur's parked downstairs if you'd like him to drive you anywhere. I pay him a large salary and he might as well be earning it.
Oh, thank you, but my hotel is only a few blocks away.
Well, I was just going to mix another batch of martinis. Sure you won't join me?
You are so very, very kind, Mr. Pearson, but I am afraid I must refuse.
Well, then. Oops. Hey, that drink really got to me. Good night, Mr. Moro. It's been a pleasure. It's an honor to make your acquaintance.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson. And good night.
Oh, they'll be singing through the sea.
As I closed the door, Mr. Pearson was happily preparing another shaker full of dry martinis. As I emerged from the building, I noted a large limousine of foreign manufacture standing in front of a no parking sign. A uniformed chauffeur was leaning against it.
Hey, you.
Are you addressing me, young man?
Yeah. You come from the Monsoon offices?
That is correct. You are Mr. Pearson's chauffeur?
Yeah. What condition did you leave him in?
A condition?
How many martinis?
He was preparing a second shaker when I left him.
Uh-oh. I better get ready to pour him out of there.
Before I had time to ponder on the behavior of Mr. Pearson's chauffeur and his abrupt departure into the building, a second car, a taxi cab, drew up behind the limousine and two more worried-looking people emerged from it. A plump, heavy-set man carrying a briefcase and a thin, sharp-faced woman also carrying a briefcase.
Excuse me, sir. Did you see a chauffeur in this car a moment ago?
Why, yes. He just went into the building.
Oh, I hope we're not too late.
If you are on your way to see Mr. Pearson, I believe you will find him in his office.
What condition did you leave him in?
Everyone seems very much concerned about Mr. Pearson's condition.
Well, I've got a payroll for him to sign. I want to catch him while he can still write.
Oh, you are Mr. Harper?
Yes, I am. Who are you?
Mr. Moto. Mr. I.A. Moto.
I'm Mary Donahue, Mr. Murdoch. I'm the attorney for this corporation.
Are you?
I want you to know that anything he said to you while under the influence of martinis will not hold up for 5 minutes in any court of law.
Thank you, Miss Donahue. I will remember that.
You'll have to excuse us now, Mr. Moto. Come along, Mary.
If we're too late, I'll hold you responsible.
Oh, shut up.
They disappeared rapidly into the building, and I walked on back to my hotel. When I rose the following morning and read the morning paper, I saw a story headlined, Corporation Head Waylaid by Mysterious Assailant. Chauffeur foils would-be kidnappers at offices of Monsoon Trading Company. Before I could read the text, my telephone rang. Mr. Moto speaking.
Mr. Moto, this is Pearson. I must see you at once. I have some information for you.
Where are you at present, Mr. Pearson? In the hospital?
I left that pest house this morning. I'm at my residence, 1000 Marina Boulevard. It'll take you exactly 20 minutes by cab. You'll meet me in front of the building now, and we'll have our conference in my car en route to the office.
I will meet you there in 20 minutes.
20 minutes, then. I'll expect you. Time is money, you know.
As my taxi drew up to the curb in front of the canopied entrance, I saw Mr. Pearson pacing indignantly up and down before the building. His gray Homburg hat was perched atop an outsized turban of gauze bandage.
Moto, well, you're exactly 1 minute and 22 seconds late.
But Mr.
Now,
Pearson,
don't apologize. Only waste more time. Come along.
Yes, sir.
My car's just around the corner. Pay that chauffeur a large salary. Mustn't keep him waiting. I suspected as much. Do you drive a car, Mr. Moto?
Why, yes. May I ask?
Oh, never mind. I see him.
See who, Mr. Pearson?
Oh, that rascal chauffeur of mine. Asleep in the back seat. Get out of there,
Mr.
You.
Mr. Pearson, watch out! I was behind Mr. Pearson and slightly to the right. The shock of the rapid-fire 30-caliber bullets lifted him off his feet and knocked him against me. Before I could regain my balance, the gunman had jumped out of the limousine and into a gray sedan that was double-parked alongside. It was soon lost in the welter of traffic on the boulevard, but I did succeed in getting the first three numbers of the license plate. At that moment, a fragrance of perfume tempered the exhaust fumes from the teeming street, and I turned to face a very, very attractive, very, very distraught young woman.
Who did it? You saw him. Don't lie to me.
Now, madam, I suggest you get yourself under control.
Why don't they come? Where's the ambulance?
Please.
Why are all those people standing around staring at him? Make them go away. I can't stand it. I just can't.
Madam, I must ask you to stop this at once.
Horace! Oh!
I said stop it!
Oh!
That is very much better. Now then, who are you?
His wife. It was all my fault.
How?
I called Ernie out the window and asked him to come upstairs.
Yes?
I wanted him to return some lingerie. They sent the wrong color. Peach.
Who is Ernie?
Our chauffeur. I was looking for the sales check when we heard the shots. Oh, is Jerome really dead? This time?
Quite dead, Mrs. Pearson. And may I say that your grief is very, very touching?
Poor Jerome. He looks so natural, stretched out there on the pavement. I keep thinking he'll get up and stagger on into the elevator. He didn't drink at all well.
Why don't you go upstairs and relax, Mrs. Pearson?
All right, I'm going. Oh.
Oh, Nettie, you all right?
Ernie, where did you go?
Oh, down to the garage. I heard a car drive in. Poor Mr. Pearson. It's all my fault.
Oh, no. No, it's mine. If I only hadn't mislaid that sales check.
Huh?
When I called you out the window to come and get that package.
Oh, that.
All right. What do we got here? Who's the witness?
I was with him when it happened, officer.
Name?
Moto. Mr. I.A. Moto.
All right. Clear a space there. Come on. Let him through with that stretcher over there.
Oh, step over here out of the crowd, Mr. Moto. I want to get your statement.
This one's DOA, boys.
Pardon me, Mr. Moto.
That is quite all right. Are you ready for that statement?
You got a pencil? No, thanks. Okay, let's have it.
This man is Jerome Pearson, a chairman of the board of an importing firm called the Monsoon Trading Company.
Mm-hmm.
You have that?
Yeah.
Last night, he was working late at his office and was knocked out and robbed. Mm. He telephoned me this morning. He did not say what was on his mind, but he seemed quite agitated. Mm. The gunman was crouched in the back seat of the limousine, and the muzzle of a carbine emerged when Mr. Pearson opened the door.
I see. What did he look like?
I did not see him distinctly. If you will look at the design of the car, you will see why. The back and sides are almost completely enclosed.
Yeah. What about the getaway?
I saw the getaway car and the back of the killer's head. The car was a gray two-door sedan. I saw only the first three digits of the license plate. 5D9.
Anything else?
Yes. And may I have my pencil back, please?
Very, very funny. Ha, ha.
Mr. Moto, what did that policeman say to you?
Very little, Mrs. Pearson, but I suggest that you and that chauffeur get together on those alibis of yours.
Well, I don't know where Ernie is. Oh, but please, Mr. Moto, I can't face their questions just yet.
I'm afraid you will have to.
Would it be legal if I just avoided them till I can collect myself?
I do not know about the legality of the matter, Mrs. Pearson, but it would most certainly be wise.
Where can we talk, Mr. Moto?
Have you any suggestions?
Oh, well, there's a little cocktail lounge up on Lombard for Ernie and I. It's just around the corner.
Very, very convenient. I suggest we go there, Mrs. Pearson.
It's a darling little place. And it was all against my mother's advice. I should have listened. But that's why I married Mr. Pearson.
Yes, very, very interesting. That brings us up to 1943, and it is only 11:45.
You're just like him, always holding a stopwatch over my head.
Always, Mrs. Pearson?
Well, he drank, you know.
Yes, I believe you mentioned that.
But it's much more important than you think. He often fell down and bumped his head.
Are you suggesting that your late husband's mysterious assailant was a double martini?
Two pitchers full before dinner. Ernie often had to carry him up to his office.
Do you know why he was working late last night, Mrs. Pearson?
He had an appointment with the vice president of the firm, Mr. Harper.
Ah, yes.
Something had come up and he wanted Jerome to sign some papers. I don't know what. It wasn't the first time. I waited outside in the car.
You were in the car when Ernie spoke to me?
Oh, yes. And then he came back to the car, and we talked.
Ernie appears to have alibis upstairs, downstairs, and all around you, Mrs. Pearson.
Well, then when the others came out and Jerome didn't, Ernie went upstairs to see why.
The others? Oh, you mean Mr. Harper and Miss Donahue?
Yes. She's the attorney for the company.
I know that.
But if you think everything was legal between those two, well... Well, after all, who am I to call the kettle black?
Mrs. Pearson, what are you trying to tell me?
Between you and me, Mr. Moto, I think that Donahue woman knocked him down a flight of stairs. In his condition, he'd never remember.
Why are you so anxious to incriminate Miss Donahue?
Well, what would you think? She was the last one out of the building.
Why did you not tell all this to the police when they investigated the attack on your husband last night?
Well, I didn't want to talk about his drinking. Things were bad enough already. That would just have been the end.
I see. And what do you want me to do for you, Mrs. Pearson?
Prove that Mary Donahue did it and Ernie didn't.
I think I can rely on you to take care of Ernie.
Oh, no. No, I don't want to alibi him unless I have to. He might get the wrong idea.
Wrong idea?
He might think it meant I still care for him, and I don't.
Oh?
I just can't stand him anymore. The way he chews on those toothpicks is just the end. And besides, if his alibi is too good, I might have trouble about that carbine I found in the back seat of my car.
Yes, but Mrs. Pearson, Mrs. Pearson, did you say you found a carbine in the back seat of your car?
Yes, and for all I know, it may be the gun that killed my husband.
Where was your car at the time your husband was killed?
In the garage, in the basement of the building where our apartment is.
That is where Ernie appeared from just after the accident.
He didn't make any secret of it, remember? He said he heard a noise and went to...
You did not allow him to say very much. Oh. Tell me, this car of yours, is it a gray two-door sedan?
That's the whole point. And the car the murderer escaped in...
Was a gray two-door sedan. What is the license number of your car, Mrs. Pearson?
Wait, it's on my key ring. Here... 5D9.
That is quite sufficient, Mrs. Pearson. Why did you not tell me this before?
I couldn't get up the nerve, Mr. Moto. After I heard you tell a policeman the gun that killed Jerome was a carbine and the gray sedan and all that, it's the end.
I agree, Mrs. Pearson. It might very well be the end. For Ernie.
Well, I don't care if it is. The way he's always wandering off the job. I mean, it is just the end.
I sincerely hoped that she was right, but I did not think so. And when I went to examine the gray sedan in the garage, I knew it was far from the end of the matter. It was the getaway car. But Ernie had turned into a very, very poor suspect. He was crouched on the carpet between the front and rear seats. He had been shot at closer range than Jerome Pearson, and the killer had used only one bullet in the base of his brain. I decided my next call would be on Mr. Harper.
Monsoon Trading Company, good afternoon. I'm sorry, Mr. Harper's in conference. Yes, I'll see that he gets your message. What can I do for you, sir?
I would like to see Miss Donahue, please.
Miss Donahue is in conference with Mr. Harper.
That is splendid. I wish to see them both.
I have orders not to disturb them.
Thank you, but that is quite unnecessary. I will do so myself.
But there's a gentleman waiting ahead of you, sir.
Yeah. What's the idea of shoving this slant? I'd push you in ahead of me, huh? I got personal connections here, mister, see? Me and the chairman of the board were... I got connections, see? I'm getting very nervous with the sinus trouble. You follow me? I gotta see Harper.
I will be very glad to tell Mr. Harper that you are here, Mr.
Tell him, Pusher Martin.
Yes.
Tell him I ain't taking no runaround. Tell him I got other contacts, only I'll listen to reason and I kind of... I gotta have a fix right now. I settle for half, only no rubber checks. They owe me. I will be
most happy to deliver your message. Please. Just relax.
You tell the chairman of the board. You tell him I got a monkey looks like his brother.
Now, look here. I left specific instructions.
Unfortunately, Mr. Harper, my business with you and Miss Donahue at the moment must take precedence over your business with each other.
Well, I'm glad you're here, Mr. Moto. You know that this embezzling old fool's actually had the nerve to threaten me.
Miss Donahue. I presume you are referring to Mr. Harper.
Who else but the dean of double entry?
That's a lie.
Now, look. Why does he keep stalling when I ask him to see his books? Ask him that, Mr. Moto. But I'm the attorney for the corporation, and I have to make a tax return.
Well, you won't need the books for that. The Monsoon Company is broke.
Oh, did Jerome Pearson ask for explanations? Is that why you killed him?
Listen to her, Mr. Moto. This is the hag who just informed me that she now owns 55% of the common stock of this corporation.
Is that true, Miss Donahue?
Certainly it's true. I bought up Jerome's debts and threw an attachment on his stocks. Perfectly legal.
But not very ethical, was it?
Well, you met him. He wasn't competent to run the firm. Dry martinis, one after the other.
They came in very handy last night, just before you pushed him down the stairs.
Now, just a minute. I think you better be specific when you make an accusation like that, Mr. Harper.
Gladly. You tricked Jerome into changing the beneficiary of his insurance.
From whom to whom?
The beneficiary was that muddle-headed wife of his, and he changed it to the Monsoon Trading Company, a corporation of the state of California.
Which, I gather, is now mostly yourself, Miss Donahue.
You're writing the wrong brief, Mr. Moto.
Huh?
You can't try a corporation for murder.
A personal responsibility can be fixed.
Not a stockholder, and that's all I am.
I believe you have a point there. On the other hand, Mr. Harper as treasurer and first vice president.
All right, Mr. Moto. What do you want?
I want to see those canceled checks.
Gladly, Mr. Moto. Just step into the next office.
I was somewhat surprised at his sudden willingness to cooperate. But when I had finished examining the canceled checks, I was even more surprised. The Monsoon Company's payroll contained more checks for salesmen than the total net profit on legitimate imports, which was considerable. The most frequently recurring payee of these checks was a person named Jacob Martin. I recalled the very nervous gentleman in the reception room who gave his name as Pusher Martin.
Well, Moto, are you satisfied?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Harper.
Wait a minute. What's your game, Moto?
Huh?
Any child can see that those figures don't add up right.
I am not interested in your business difficulties, Miss Donahue. I am not even interested in whom killed Mr. Pearson. I am only interested in the motive behind his death.
Well, she did it. Because she cheated her way to the top of the firm only to find that nothing could save the business but Jerome's life insurance.
Now, wait a minute.
I came here to investigate a tip on dope smuggling through your import business.
What?
Yesterday evening, Mr. Pearson seemed to have nothing to tell me. Last night, someone apparently attempted his life. This morning, on the telephone, he said he had something important to tell me. He died before he could tell it. I think I know now what he wanted to tell me.
What was that?
That Mr. Harper, through juggling the books, was able to carry on a smuggling operation without Mr. Pearson's knowledge. Recently, Mr. Harper appears to have been caught short, and you took advantage of the fact, Miss Donahue.
That was Pearson's fault. He withdrew a terrific amount of cash the day before he was killed.
No explanation.
I'll explain plenty when I drag you into court. You can count on me for a witness, Mr. Moto.
My suspects were beginning to cancel each other out. But of one thing I was certain. The actual shootings had been done by a hired killer. And the fact that he operated in broad daylight on a crowded street, taking such desperate chances, indicated that he was either insane or a drug addict. I suspected the latter. As I left Harper's office, I observed Pusher Martin had decided not to wait. But I soon located him in a dingy establishment called the Atlas Hotel.
What do you want?
I want to talk to you, Mr. Pusher Martin.
Oh, yeah. Come on. You got anything for me? Okay, where's the stuff?
Do not be so impatient, Mr. Martin.
Oh, I don't feel so good, I tell you. That monkey, it's breaking my back.
You can still feel worse.
Yes. What do you want? I got money. I got a check for a grand.
That will not suffice. I need information.
You don't get nothing from me.
Who gave you that $1,000 check, Martin?
Oh, leave me alone, will you? Leave me alone! Sick.
I have plenty of time, Martin, and I feel very much better than you do.
Hey, will you find that croaker for me? I put him on the scent for a Jollibee fate.
I will do what I can for you, but you will have to help me. Who gave you that $1,000 check?
Oh, I can't stand it no more. It's breaking my back, I tell you.
It will get worse, Martin.
Okay. My shirt pocket.
Do not exert yourself. I will get it.
It's a little smudge on the counter. I'm so wet. You see there, the signature, the chairman of the board. Yeah, chairman of the board.
Who forged this signature, Martin?
He wrote it himself. He wrote it himself right in front of me.
What was it supposed to be in payment for?
He wanted I should knock off his brother.
Then you made a mistake, didn't you?
Huh? He's dead, ain't he?
Exactly.
Well, the papers, they got it wrong. That was his brother, his twin brother. That other guy, the chauffeur, he kept hanging around the garage. I had to burn him, too, to get out.
Do you know what you are saying?
Yeah, I don't feel so good, so I know I'm making sense. Oh, I got to sweat something terrible.
Do not distress yourself, Martin. You will be in a very nice, cool place very shortly. After I had turned Pusher Martin over to the police, I investigated his story as thoroughly as I could at that late hour. Apparently, it was quite impossible that Mr. Pearson could have had a brother, twin, or otherwise. He was a first child. His mother died in childbirth, and his father died 1 month later. Unfortunately, I was not finished with Mrs. Pearson.
Mr. Moto, I've been calling and calling, trying to reach you. I've been so worried. Oh, it's just the end.
This time, Mrs. Pearson, you may be right.
Can I fix you a drink? There's nothing in the house but those prepared martinis Jerome used to drink. Is that all right?
I have never tasted prepared martinis, but I should be interested in sampling one of those, Mrs. Pearson.
I could use one myself. What did you think of Mary Donahue? Isn't she the end?
A most interesting lady. I find you all most interesting.
Jerome used to drink them cold, but I put in even more ice. They're nasty for that.
Thank you.
Hope it doesn't make you fall down the way it did poor Jerome.
Yes, indeed.
Well, cheers.
Cheers?
What's the matter? Too dry for you?
Did you open a fresh bottle when you made these
Why, yes. What's the matter?
Where is that bottle, Mrs. Pearson, please?
Right there, by the ice bucket.
Ah. Is this all your husband ever drank?
Yes. Gallons of it. It's a special brand. There's a whole case underneath.
I'd like to examine that.
Go right ahead. Help yourself.
The same. And this one, too. Mrs. Pearson, you are quite sure that this is all your husband ever drank?
Why, yes. He even took it with him to bars and in people's homes.
I see.
He'd sit and drink them right out of the bottle like a little child. Then he'd be falling down drunk, of course. That's how we lost so many friends. They dropped us just like...
Like flies, I believe you said before.
It was the end.
Excuse me.
Who are you phoning?
Patience, Mrs. Pearson. And I think you will be very enlightened. This is Mr. Moto, Mr. Gary.
Oh, yes, Mr. Moto.
Has the autopsy been performed on Jerome Pearson yet?
Yes, Mr. Moto. They rushed him through.
Do you have the report at hand?
Yeah, right here in front of me.
Ah, very good.
So, a funny thing, Mr. Moto. The doctor said they could have saved themselves the trouble.
Huh?
He would have been dead in a week or two without assistance.
He was ill? What ailment, Mr. Gary?
Brain tumor. Malignant.
Was there any alcohol present in the body? Is there a notation on the head wounds?
Yeah. Accidental fall due to periodic fainting spells. About his condition.
Thank you, Mr. Gary. Thank you so very, very much.
What is it, Mr. Moto? Were the martinis poisoned?
No. No, Mrs. Pearson. Quite the contrary. The martinis your husband drank contained nothing but colored water.
Well, then what made him get so drunk?
He did not fall down from drunkenness, Mrs. Pearson. Your husband was a very, very sick man.
Well, who killed him?
He killed himself.
Oh, but he couldn't have. He
employed a gunman to do it, but it was suicide.
Then why didn't he leave a note or something? He could have ruined us all.
I imagine that is precisely what he wanted to do. You all thought that he was a hopeless drunk and took advantage of him. He allowed Mary Donahue to fleece him out of his interest in the company, let Mr. Harper juggle his books to cover a smuggling operation he was engaged in, and let you go your way with Ernie.
But Mr. Moto...
In short, Mrs. Pearson, your husband allowed all three of you to furnish yourselves with as convincing a set of motives as a jury could ask for.
But Jerome wasn't like that. He must have intended it as a joke.
In your case, that may very well be. But he would not have involved me in his plan just for a joke. I think he sincerely wanted to bring Miss Donahue and Mr. Harper to justice. He must have wanted his suicide to be found out sooner or later in order to prevent them from collecting the insurance that would have kept the corporation from going bankrupt.
Oh, really? Jerome was the end. Oh, what's going to become of us all?
If Miss Donahue and Mr. Harper do not go to prison, they will probably sue each other to death. You might even be forced to earn your own living, Mrs. Pearson.
Oh. Well, my mother always used to say that hell hath no fury like a dry martini. But this...
You are so very, very right, Mrs. Pearson. It is the end. I did not learn until later how thoroughly Mr. Pearson had planned his charade of the dry martinis. The final joke was the check with which he paid the man he hired to kill him. It not only furnished proof that he was a suicide, it also bounced, thus depriving the assassin of his ill-earned fee. Mr. Pusher Martin should have heeded the advice of the Japanese sage who said, "Where profit is, loss is hidden nearby." And now, may the autumn fragrance of an October evening lie gently upon your lidded eyes and the cares of the day drift away as silently as the fallen petals of a flower upon the serene waters of a stream curving between two willow trees at a place where two lovers meet. Good night.